Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah, Chaf Tas Mitzvah Hashem. This morning we're going to be finishing the second parak of the Masechta, and we'll have a couple of opening remarks for the end. We'll start the Mishnah, the third parak. We start with the Mishnah in Chaf Ches Amud Beis. Again, second half of the second parak of the Masechta dealt with the Mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah. So primarily now for the last 30 blot of Gemara, a little bit less, we've been mostly focusing on the structure of the Sukkah. How to build a sukkah and all the regulations, requirements, halachos that are involved in the actual building of the sukkah. And now structurally the sukkah is up. So how do you sit in the sukkah? So the answer is it's really simple. You sit in the sukkah. But for the last four days, now fifth day of our discussion, it really opened up on Daf Chav Hei. And now since Chav Hei, Chavav, Chav Zayin, Chav Ches, Chav Tes. So the Gemara now is going to be focusing on the mitzvah of yeshiva. So how exactly are we to sit in the sukkah? When are we to sit in the sukkah? And who is exempt and when are people exempt? So mostly it's been a question of exemptions in terms of what the halach has been focusing on. We are continuing now in the Mishnah. We're in the Mishnah of Chav Ches Amud Beis. We begin. Kol shivas hayamim adam osa sukaso keva ubeso arai. So for the 7 days of sukkah, here's what you're supposed to do. Make your sukkah kavua. Now, making your sukkah kavua goes against everything we've been discussing up until now, right? The sukkah's got to be a rai, so we can make a really simple distinction in terms of a proper understanding of our Mishnah. And that is that for as far as the sukkah is concerned, the actual structure of the sukkah, you make a rai. As far as the functioning of the sukkah is concerned, meaning how you are in terms of the time you spend in your sukkah, so that's keva. The majority of your time should be spent in the sukkah. Osa sukaso keva ubeso arai. Yeah, pop in and out of your house. You probably need to get the food from the house. But in other words, yeah, so in the house, so you spend a little bit of time. In the sukkah, that's where you spend most of your time. Now, yardu gshamim, amasai mutalif nos. So now it starts raining. So there's no expectation that you have to be in the sukkah while it's raining. As the Gemara is going to explain to us, as we all know, the pasuk says, teishu, and the drush is kain taduru. You live in the sukkah like you live in your house. If it starts leaking in the house, you're not staying in the house. So if it starts leaking in the sukkah, i.e. it rains, so you're not expected to stay in the sukkah. So at what point in time now is it that you're going to be kicked out of the sukkah? When do you have the halachic patur of no longer having to be in the sukkah? So misha tisrach hamikbah. So you're eating a mikbah. Mikbah is like kind of like a porridge. It's like kind of like a hot cereal. And now it's at this point in time where the dripping is coming through the schach and it's going into your porridge. And it's at that point in time now you have a legitimate patur to go ahead and to exit the sukkah. So they gave a mashal. So what is it analogous to that you're going in and you are exiting the sukkah as a result of the rain? So So it's like the servant who's going and presenting water to his rav, to his master, and he splashes water in his face. And that's a lot of pronouns. He splashes water in his face. So who's the he? Who's the his? How does the mashal work? Stay tuned. We're going to be discussing that a little bit later on this morning. We start off with the Gemara Tanur Rabbanan Kol Shivas Hayamim Adam Osa. We'll get to it. Kol Shivas Hayamim Adam Osa Sukaso Keva Ubeso Arai. So here the Brice is going to sound very similar to our Mishnah, which that's how these things work. But in the Brice, we're going to get a little bit more detail that we didn't see together in the Mishnah. So the first point of the Brisa, like we learned in the Mishnah, is for the 7 days of Sukkah. So the main dorming should be done in the Sukkah. So Ketzad, Ayilu Kelim Naim, Alam L'Sukkah. And now, practically speaking, what does that mean? It means bring your fine dishes into the Sukkah. Matzalos Naos Malam L'Sukkah. Bring the nice sheets out to the Sukkah. Ocha V'Shalsa Matai B'Sukkah. You eat in the Sukkah, you drink in the Sukkah, you spatzir in the Sukkah. Okay? Your Sukkah is not that big. It's going to be a pretty short walk, but... Okay, relax in the sukkah. So, Minani Miladan Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes another brisa, another supplemental brisa. Again, we're going to get just a little more details in this brisa. Teshvu Kein Taduru. The pasuk says that Besukas Teshvu Shivas Yamim. And now the Gemara is focusing on the word Teshvu. We've heard this drasha numerous times. I'm not sure if it's been said as clearly as we're learning right now. And that is the drasha of Teshvu Kein Taduru. So, Mikan Amru Kol Shivas Yamim Osa Adam Sukaso Keva. For the 7 days, your sukkah is going to be your mainstay. Ubeso arai, your house, you'll walk in and out of your house. but be in the sukkah. So ketzad hayilu keilim nayim malam the sukkah. Again, same point here in the braisa. Bring your fine cutlery and plates out to the sukkah. Matzavas naos malam the sukkah. Sheets, and then I sheets go out to the sukkah. Ocha v'shosa matali b'sukkah. Again, eat, drink, and relax in the sukkah. And then one more point of this braisa. Umishanein b'sukkah. And also, learning should be done in the sukkah as well. Now, Ini the Gemara says on this last one, are you right about that? So a statement made by Rava. When you're learning Chumash, when you're learning Mishnah, so that you learn in the sukkah. But when it comes to Tanui, so that you're doing outside of the sukkah. So what is Tanui? I'll get back to that in just a moment. So, but Rava can't be arguing with a Braisa. Meaning if the Braisa says clearly that the Shinun is done in the sukkah, so how can Rava make a statement that would run counter to the Braisa? It doesn't work that way. A Namora can't say something that's keneged a Braisa. So lokasha habemikras habiyuneg. So the Gemara says it depends what kind of learning we're talking about. Are you running through what we call bikias, right? Are you just simply going through things that you already know, but you're just chazering over? Or iyune. Iyun is like what you and I describe as iyun. More analysis, right? Painstaking analysis of the Torah. And I'm using those words very carefully. So ki hada Rava, the Gemara says, just like Rava Bar Chama, ki havakayma mikame de Rav Chista, we were in front of Rav Chista, so mirate b'gemara b'hadeh hadade, so the first thing that we would do is we would run through the Masechta, and then v'hadeh ma'ayna b'svar, and afterwards we would do iyun, we would do some painstaking analysis. Well, we would be very careful about being medayik, comparing one thing to another. Okay, so what comes out is the following. That there are basically two types of learning. There's the learning in which you are a goreis, you're just simply going over and reviewing. You have some familiarity with it already, but you just want to get the nusach down. You want to get the lashon down, so you just go over it. That's what's called girsa. And then another type of learning is what's described as iyun or shinun, which is basically to go ahead and to break your teeth and analyze and make sure that you go over everything. And now let's plug that in back into what we're saying. We're saying that the girsa, that's done in the sukkah, but the iyun is done outside the sukkah. Why? So such good Rashis. Rashi over here, I'm going to go back. I'm on Chav Ches Amud Beis, and it's about 5-6 lines from the bottom. Rashi Tanui. Hashasu desvaru litroch ulishanein. So when you're really endeavoring to go ahead and to investigate. V'chein shmaita damarai she'enam ba'os ela mechlau dikduke. And when it has to come through inferences, shein lamenim mitoch divrei mishnah, meaning you're critically reading the mishnah, making critical inferences based on the way the mishnah phrased it, based on the way the mishnah didn't phrase it, de medamu milsa lamilsa, comparing one area to another area. So this is what we call iyun. It's an investigative learning. So that is done outside the sukkah. Look at the next Rashi, bar metalasa. So why is that done outside the sukkah? What difference does it make whether you're inside or outside the sukkah? Rashi writes as follows. Im iratzeh. First of all, you don't have to leave the sukkah. So Rashi says simply it's volitional. That you are now excused from the sukkah when you're learning iyun. Why? De mitztaerhu. Because when you are learning iyun, so it requires, it demands a lot of energy, a lot of mental energy. And it's at this point in time where if you're in a confined location, it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult to expend so much mental energy. Rashi writes, "Umitzta'er pater min asukkah," because now once you're in a position where it's uncomfortable, right? It hurts a little bit mentally, so it's straining. So v'ha'evir yafelo, and it's good to be outside. It's good to breathe fresh air. Laharchiv da'ato, and what it does is it expands your mind. So kasaka da'ite tanu hayne mishanin, and then Rashi over there just simply explains why we thought it was Akasha, because we thought that when the Braisa said Mishanein, so it meant the same thing as Tanun that Rava was describing. And the answer, of course, is they're not the same. Meaning when the Braisa was saying Mishanein, what the Braisa was describing was Girsa, running through the learning. So when you're running through Chumash, running through Mishnayos, so there you're in the Sukkah, it's not that draining. But now when you're in Iyun, where it requires a lot of thought, so that you're going to be doing now outside the sukkah. Again, according to Rashi, you don't have to leave the sukkah. It just happens to be that sometimes a little fresh air is going to be really helpful in terms of relieving some of the stress and strain. Okay, back to the Gemara. Chav Tesam and Aleph. Yeah. Amar Rava, Mani Mishtaya b'Mitalasa, Mani Michla bar Mitalasa. cups can be in the sukkah, but plates are out of the sukkah. Rashi explains, this is after you have eaten. So after you have eaten, so for the cups, it's normal for people to hang on to their cups even after they ate, right? They may want to drink again. So hydration is really important. Good. So you're allowed to keep the cups in the sukkah. That's not a front. However, the plates after you finish eating, so if you keep them in the sukkah, it's just not proper. It's not appropriate to have dirty plates in the sukkah. You're not going to want to be in the sukkah if that's where the dirty plates are. Fine. So that is to be taken outside the sukkah. Chatzva v'shachel, everything I just said is Rashi. Chatzva v'shachel, bar mitalasa. As far as Rashi describes earthenware jugs, wooden pails, so that is to be taken outside the sukkah, meaning those are not eating utensils. They're more like preparation utensils. And so you're not going to take the bowls and the mixing bowl. You're not going to bring them out to the dining room table. So don't bring them out to the sukkah. Vishraga bimitalasa. Now, as far as a candle is concerned, a lantern is concerned, so we're going to have two versions. Version number one is you take the lantern, bring it into the sukkah. Vamila bar mitalasa. And some have a girsa that should be outside the sukkah. Which one's right? V'lo pligi ha-besukkah gedola, ha-besukkah katana. It really depends on how large your sukkah is. If your sukkah is a large sukkah, so then I'm going to say it over like Rashi. So then bring it into the sukkah. Bring the lantern into the sukkah. But if it's a really small sukkah, Rashi describes a minimalist, a 7x7 tefach sukkah. So don't bring the lantern into the sukkah. Now Rashi doesn't explain why, but we could guess. And we don't have to guess, by the way. The Ran says it very clearly, is that if it's a really tiny sukkah and you bring a lantern into the sukkah, so that of course is going to be a fire hazard. And so then it is not prudent to bring it into the sukkah. There's a good chance that you and the sukkah are going to go up in flames. Well, certainly the sukkah is going to go up in flames, and you're going to get a bad burn. Yardu gishamim, tana, mishitisrach amikbah shel grisim. Okay, so here, another supplemental brisa, augmenting to our Mishnah. So our Mishnah just uses the words mishitisrach amikbah, right? And the brisa adds over here, shel grisim. Okay. Now, again, we're not, so it's like porridge. It's like hot cereal. The point, says Rashi, is that it doesn't take a lot of rain to ruin it. So in other words, the brisa over here is being makel. The brisa says is that once the dripping starts dripping, even though it's not like a heavy drip, but nevertheless, if it's going to ruin the food that you're eating, you're right, the delicate food, where just a couple of drips in there and that's it. So this brisa over here is just simply allowing you to exit your sukkah at a really early point on in the drip. Abai have a kayasa kamidir Rav Yosef, bimitalalasa. So Abai was in front of Rav Yosef and they were in the sukkah together, Neshev Zika v'kamaisa tzivusa. So over here, the wind started blowing and the twigs came down from the schach right into the food. So Amr lehu Rav Yosef, panuli mani me'acha. So Rav Yosef says, no, we're out of here. Okay, I'm getting schmutz from the schach into my food. We're done. We're leaving. So Amalei Abai va'atanam v'shitisrach ha-mikba. So Abai says, wait 1 second. There are no drips coming down. It's not raining. So okay, so a little bit of shmutz goes into the food. So Amalei lididi kevin da'anin edayte kemisha tisrach ha-mikba damili. So Rav Yosef says, look, I'm really sensitive. And you got a little bit of the schach shmutz coming down into my food. At this point in time, I'm way too delicate and it really bothers me. And I'm a star. I can't be in the sukkah anymore. Rashi reminds us of the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim brings down that three people, chayim eina chayim, three people whose lives are just a misery, and they are harachmanim, somebody who's overly sensitive and overly merciful, and just is in other words, obviously, right, it goes without saying, we need to have rachmanis. Right? In fact, that's the Yud Gimel Midos. Well, one of the Yud Gimel Midos that Kadosh Baruch Hu has that we're supposed to emulate is to be a racham. So, but a rachamim over here means is that you're sensitive to everything. Right? Veha raschanim. And somebody who gets angry really easily. And finally, anine yada, somebody who is really sensitive and really delicate. So, she'enim yechom lizbol shum davar. So the common denominator between all three of these people is that they can't tolerate things. In other words, they're way too sensitive. They're way too angry. So they just simply can't tolerate. And as a result of that, so their lives are a misery. So, and the Amar of Yosef, and perhaps just tremendous self-awareness, one of the best self-awarenesses that we have seen in the Gemara, is Rav Yosef says, Kulu Isnubi, you know, I'm 3 for 3. right? I have too much mercy. I get angry too easily, and I'm way too delicate. Okay, so that's the Gemara in Pesachim, and it fits into what we're learning now in the Gemara in Sukkah regarding Rav Yosef. Basically, a little bit comes into his food, and at that point in time, he's like, I can't. I just can't be here anymore. Okay, good. Tana Rabbanan. Continuing with a Raisa. Haya Ocha B'Sukkah V'Yarduk Shem V'Yarad. Ein Matrichan Aso La'alo Sa'chik Marsu Daso. Okay, question comes up all the time. The Gemara here gives a very definitive answer. Okay, so it started dripping. You left the sukkah. You had license to leave the sukkah. You're a mitzta'er. Okay, so it stopped raining. So do we have to go back to the sukkah? So the Braisa says, with clarity, no. There's no need to go back to the sukkah. Not until you can finish your meal inside the house. So, haya yashin tachar sukkah v'yaduk shamin v'yarad. Ein matrichan aso la'alo sa'chi or. Also, you're sleeping in the sukkah. It starts raining. Okay, so you exit the sukkah. You go into your home. And it's at that point in time now where it stopped raining. So do you have to go back to your sukkah? So the Braisa says, no. You could stay inside. Ad sheye or. Okay. Now, on the end of the Braisa over here, although the Braisa seems to be giving clarity, but the Gemara has a little bit of a question regarding how to read the end of that Braisa, Ibailahu. Ad sheye or, ad sheye or. Okay. Which one is it? Which one's correct? Now, if you're looking at the Gemara, so you realize that with the one way to read it is with an ayin, the other way to read it is with an aleph. And that's different. If you're reading it with an ayin, so that means until you wake up. Meaning, you don't have to go back to the sukkah until you wake up. Or, alternatively, achiya or with an aleph, which means until it gets light outside. Now, what's the difference between those two? Don't you wake up when it gets light outside? Not necessarily. As Rashi points out over here, it could mean that the correct way to read the braisa is with an ayin. And it means that, let's say, midnight, you had to leave the sukkah because it started raining, and then it only rained for an hour. Here in Florida, even less. So and now you wake up 2 a.m. Okay? So do you have to go back? So if it's with an ayin, the answer would be yes. If it's with an aleph, no, you don't have to go back until the morning. That's a major difference. So which is the correct way to read the braisa? So Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, so allow us to investigate. So here, in this alternative braisa that we're learning now, it says sheyor and yala amudashachar. Now, it can't possibly be that it's with an aleph. I know you're reading it with an aleph right now, but it can't be, because then, of course, it's redundant. When it gets light, and amudashachar. And not only is it redundant, right, the amudashachar is not even when it gets light. Amudashachar is when the eastern sky is lit, but that's not when it's light outside. Okay, so obviously, you can't read the braisa with an aleph. You have to read it with an ayin. And so Tarte, the Gemara asks the question, is it coming to repeat itself? Obviously not. So, Ela'im ha'chiyor v'yala'im ha'chachar. Okay, so we're going to take the aleph and we're going to change it to an ayin, and this is how it's going to come out. And again, this is what Rashi says, that if you're going to be learning it with an ayin, so now it means as follows, that in order to go back to the sukkah, you need two things to happen. Number one, you need to wake up. And that's a correct conjunction. And it's got to be light outside. So that means to say that, let's say, again, midnight, it started raining, you exited the sukkah. Stop raining already by 1. 2 a.m., you woke up. Do you have to go back? So not the way we're reading the braisa now. Because you need two things. You need to wake up, and it needs to be light outside. Okay, good. Let's go in the other direction, says Rashi. Let's say it's light outside. Does someone need to wake you up at this point in time? No. It's sukkahs, it's Chol HaMoed. You could sleep in a little bit. I'm sure there's a later minyan. No, you don't have to wake up. You don't have to wake up at Heyer. No one needs to wake you up. Meaning, you can sleep a little bit longer, right? In other words, you need both. You need it to be light, and you need to wake up. That's our correct understanding of the braisa. And so that's what we assume now is the correct pshat. That in order to once you were relieved from sleeping in the sukkah because it started raining, so you don't have to go back into the sukkah until it's both morning and you woke up. Good. Mashalama davadama. Okay. In the Mishnah, so the Mishnah taught us that if it rains, so they give a mashal, meaning that it's not good. Clearly it's a siman min hashamayim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unhappy. And the mashal is, it's like when you're trying to give water to the master, and what happens is that he splashes it in your face. Now again, with all those pronouns, so who's splashing it on who? So, mashlama davadama ibai luhu, mishafach lami. Okay, who splashed it on who? And there really are two different ways to understand the Mishnah. And Rashi, I'm gonna paraphrase over here. I'm not gonna read the Rashi inside. But Rashi basically says like this. One way we can understand the mashal is that you're the attendant and you're presenting the water and you're pouring it on the face of the master. How does that work with the sukkah? Meaning that you are sitting in a sukkah that does not deserve to be sat in. Meaning because it's raining, so now your service, meaning you're sitting in the sukkah, so that is, it's an affront. It's like you're pouring water in the face of the master. That's one possible way to understand the Mishnah. The other possible way to understand the Mishnah is just in the reverse. Meaning who's pouring on whom? It's the master pouring on the Eved. Meaning the Eved's coming and he's serving, and the master comes and takes that water that was just given to him and pours it on the servant. Meaning basically saying, I'm totally not pleased with it. Okay. Practically speaking, I'm not sure if it makes a difference, but with the fact that the Mishnah is only giving us pronouns, so there are two viable ways to understand the Mishnah. So the Gemara is going to have a very definitive understanding. Tashma d'tanya. So here, once again, we come up with but presented to us is that we have a supplemental brisa. Shafach lo rabba kiton apan av amar lo yefsheb mishimushech. So the Rav is pouring it on the attendant. Okay, so over here, no pronouns. Over here in the brisa, clear demarcation of who is pouring on whom. And that is the Rav is pouring it on the attendant. And basically saying, efshi b'shimushech. Right, you're coming to serve me? Not interested in your service. Okay. Tan Rabbanu bizman she'acham elokei siman ra l'chol ha'olam kulo. Okay, before we continue in the Gemara. Okay, so rain on Sukkot is a siman klala, so obviously we don't want rain. Right, this is going to tie into the beginning of the Gemara in Tanis. The beginning of Gemara in Tanis, so the fast days, the public fast days that were enacted as a result of the fact that it didn't rain. So in Eretz Yisrael, there's a rainy season. The rainy season is, of course, during the winter, or during the summer. It doesn't rain in Eretz Yisrael. So, obviously that rain is really important for growth and for harvesting. So when do we start petitioning for the rain? So you're going to see in the beginning of Tanis that really in principle we would like to start asking for rain basically at Sukkot time, meaning Sukkot is the Chag Havmayim, right? That's going to be the first Mishnah we're going to see together in Rosh Hashanah, and so really in principle we'd like to ask for rain on the very beginning of Sukkot. The problem, of course, is that if it rains on Sukkot, forcing us out of our Sukkot, that's a siman klala, as we're learning over here. So as we all know, so what do we do in terms of rain? So we postpone the petitioning. So even though in principle we would like to start in the beginning of Sukkot, but at the same time, however, we have the mitzvah of Sukkah, and rain on Sukkot is a siman klala. So therefore, we postpone all the way to the end of Sukkot, i.e., Shmini Atzeres, and then then we ask for rain. And here in Chutz Aretz, as part of our confusion, we're so confused in Chutz Aretz. So what happens is that right, the halacha is we're going to see this in the Gemara coming up a little bit later in the Masechta, that in Chutz Aretz you're supposed to sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. So it's a funny phenomena where on Musaf of Shmini Atzeres, so we're asking for rain, and then immediately we run right to the Sukkah. Okay. In the context of this discussion, it's funny, but that's how it works out. Anyway, Tana Rabbanan. So we talked about rain and Sukkot being a siman klala. So here, until the end of the perek, so we're going to be talking about other simani klala. So we are right halfway down to Chavtesam and Aleph, and we're starting at the Braisa. Tana Rabbanan, first wide line. Bizman she'achama loke siman ra l'chol ha'olam kulo. So when the sun is loke. Now, I'll call it a solar eclipse. It's probably not a solar eclipse. First of all, solar eclipses are totally predictable, right? We know exactly when they're coming. And they're pretty much on schedule. So probably not a solar eclipse. It's probably things like, and I'm just giving suggestions, things like a red sun or a red moon or it could be just simply discolorations within the celestial bodies. It could be that. Anyway, I'm also just happy saying I'm not sure. But regardless, in other words, we're looking at various anomalies within the presentation of the celestial bodies, and it's a siman. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu sending messaging. So bizman she'acham elokei siman ra l'chol ha'olam kulo. So if the sun is totally afflicted, it's totally right. It went totally dark. Again, not clear exactly what it is. A discoloration, an eclipse, regardless. So it's bad for the kol olam kulo. It's a bad sign for the entire world. Right, the king made a meal for his for all of his people, and vinich panas lefneim, and he illuminated. He brought out the right in modern Hebrew. It's a flashlight, but okay, he took out a lantern. So kas aleim va'amar la'avdo told panas mipneim va'oshivim b'choshech. But he's so unhappy. He's like, you know what? Take the light away. Okay, to show his displeasure. Good. So that very simple to now see the mushal. So when the sun is no longer radiating in the normal way it does. It shows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was unhappy with everybody. Tanya will enter another bris. Rabbi Meir Omer calls Mancha Maos Lokin Simon Rala Sonem Shal Yisrael. So Rabbi Meir has a slightly different take in terms of when there is discolorations of the luminaries. So it's bad, but not bad for the entire world. It's bad for the Jewish people, right? So Sonem Shal Yisrael over here is a euphemism. Obviously, we don't even want to mention Klala and relate it to the Jewish people, but that's what it's talking about. In other words, who suffers? So Jews suffer, right? It's right. The Gemara says it. It's a historical reality. So it's the Jews who are suffering. So Mashallah suffer. Shabbala beisa sefer ritzu biado midog misharaga lokos bechol yom yom hu doeg. Teacher comes in with the whip and who's now getting nervous? So the star student who's sitting in the front, he's not worried, right? The student who gets hit all the time, so he's nervous. So the Gemara says, Hagam, same thing over here. The nimshal should be obvious. Tanu Rabbanan, we continue with another brisa. Bizman shacham alokas siman ra la ovdei kochavim. So here in this other brisa, so it's going to be slightly different. If the sun is discolored, so that's bad for the non-Jewish population. And levana alokas siman ra la sonem she yisram, imne she yisram onim levana vavdei kochavim lechama. Okay, and the obvious distinction is that when the sun gets discolored, so because the non-Jewish world bases their year based on the sun. So, as a result of that's a simon. It's a sign for the non-Jewish world. And then, if the moon has either an eclipse or discoloration, so that's bad for us. Right? It's obviously because our entire calendar is based on the moon. If you see the discoloration of the sun or presumably the moon out in the east. Bad for the people out there in the east. And b'marav, and if the discoloration occurs out in the west, so simimra, liyoshe marav, so that's bad for the people in the west. And b'emsa rekiya simimra, l'cholam kulo. If it's in the middle of the sky, it's the top of the dome, so that's bad for everybody. Panav domim ladam, cherev bala olam. Let's say it gives off a reddish hue. So that means that there's going to be bloodshed in the world. Right, literally, swords are going to. There's going to be war, and lesak. And now, if it looks like sackcloth, a sackcloth by color is black, has a blackish hue. So chitzei rav b'im la'olam. So that means that there's a famine coming to the world, and when people are famished, so they discolor, says Rashi, and they become more blackish in color. Lezu ulezu cher v'chitzei rav b'im la'olam. If it's red and it's black, so then both are coming to the world. Laka b'chnisa sopar neyosho lavom. Be it siaso memeres lavo. So let's say the discoloration occurs bichnisa. So Rashi says that's when it sets. So that means that there's going to be time. We have a little bit of time. Obviously, the setting of the sun took place after the entire day. So that means show a lavo. It's going to take a time, but it's going to come, but not immediately. However, be it siaso if it occurs at sunrise, so then that means to say memeres lavo. It's coming really quickly. Now v'yeshar memchilaf advarim. And some say the opposite, that if it occurs at sunset, so that means it's coming immediately. Why? Because there's no time between the sun setting and when it actually sets. Basically, it's like time's up. If it occurs in the morning, so then that means to say that you have a lot more time. So various nuschaos in terms of which one means that it's delayed and which one means that you won't have no time. Now, not only is the nation going to get afflicted, but also their gods are going to get afflicted. Now, with their gods, what are we talking about? So what we're talking about, says Rashi, is that every ummah, every nation, so they have ministering angels. So with the ministering angels, right, the Derech Hashem, I quoted this before, Derech Hashem makes a big deal about this, is that everything that exists in this world physically, so there's a spiritual counter component. Of it in the Olam Elyon, okay. So to the best of my understanding, obviously it's extraordinarily limited. So in other words, and that's not just true for people, it's true for nations as well. So you have ministering angels for all the nations. And so the likui occurs not only to the physical nation, but to the spiritual component as well. So Shenemar v'chol aleihem Yisrael meshvatim ani Hashem. All right, beferish pasuk and parshas bo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, not only am I going to deal with the Egyptians, I'm going to deal with the spiritual influences, the ministering angels of the Egyptians as well. So when the Jewish people are compliant and we're doing what we're supposed to do, so we don't have to be worried about any of this. It's just simply we can ignore it. Right, the Navi Yirmiyahu says very clearly, don't be afraid of any kind of celestial phenomena. The Goyim are afraid of them. And the diak over here is such a simple diak. Of dekochavim yechasu, ben Yisrael yechasu. Yeah, non-Jews are afraid, but we Jewish people, there's no need for us to be afraid. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara continues. Again, more about simanim. Bishvil arba dvarim chama loke.
What's the point about the simanim? You're not supposed to rely on these.
Correct, correct. In other words, but at the same time, they're real. I mean, in other words, they work. There's something to them. So both statements are true. In other words, right, when we're compliant, so there's no need for us to be concerned about it. However, it is a phenomena, and it's real. So the brice over here numbers bishul arba dvarim chamaloka. Now, if the sun is going to be eclipsed, discolored, so it's because of our behavior, and specifically what? So over here, this brice articulates four specific events. That lead about to the klala. Number one, Allah based in shemes ve'inu nisba kalacha. Allah based in dies and we don't properly eulogize him. We don't show the proper kavod even after his death to give him a proper eulogy. Number two, al nara marasa shetzaka beir ve'in moshi Allah. A woman's being violated. Okay, technically over here it's talking about a married woman. A woman's being violated. She's in the city, and no one's doing anything about it. And you're just totally ignoring what is basic justice. Number three, Amishkav Zachor. And number four, Ashne Achin, Shenishbach Damam Keechad. And two brothers are being killed together. Basically, it's a distortion of the entire justice system, a perversion. So for that, you have Likui. Uvishwal Arbat Var Maoris Lokin. Now that was for Likui of the sun. Now over here, a list of four. In terms of why the Ma'oros, other luminary bodies, it could be talking about the sun, could be talking about the planets, okay, whatever it's describing. Obviously, my understanding over here is extraordinarily limited in terms of what the Gemara is describing. And oh, by the way, Rashi over here also, Rashi does this pretty often, and here's an example where Rashi says, why these particular four connected with the sun? So Rashi says, I don't know, right? He does not have a Masorah in terms of why these four for the Likui of the sun. Anyway, we're up to the next Brisa, the Likui of the Ma'oros. So, Al-Koshe Plastar, you write up forged documents. Al-Me'ide Eidu Sheker, testify falsely in court. Al-Megadli Behemadaka Be'eretz Yisrael, raising small animals in Eretz Yisrael, where it is nearly impossible to shepherd them properly, and they're going to go out to other people's fields and eat from other people's fields. Al-Kotase Ilanas Tovos, and cutting a fruit tree. Cutting a fruit tree is an Issa Daraisa of Bal Tashchis. And Rashi also adds over here, is your Boed Ba Kadosh Baruch Hu U'Bibir Chaso Shemashbia Tovo. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you good. And what do? You cut it down? That's crazy. So, Uvishvol Da'al Dvarim Nichse Ba'le Batim Nimsarim Lamachos. For four things. So, the assets and the wealth of the wealthy are going to be handed over to the government. And they are Amash Eshtaris Peruim. So if you go ahead and you hold on to a loan document where it was already paid up. And so what's supposed to happen is that you're supposed to give the loan document over to the borrower so that he could tear it up and destroy it. But for whatever reason, you didn't hand it back to him, even though it was paid already. And then you're going to be extraordinarily tempted at a later point in time to try to collect a second time. Number two, Al-Mavid Beribis, somebody who lends interest, Rashi points out, obviously, over here, it's to a Jew, which is an Isser of the Torah. Number three, Al Shaya Sipik Biadam Limchos Velo Michu. Wealthy people had a chance to give Tochacha. And Rashi writes over here, right? Rashi over here is really just sharing with us real world advice, and that is people listen to wealthy people. That's just that's the way the world works. It's not a new phenomena. It's been around forever, right? Ein chadash tachas hashemesh. So people listen to wealthy people. So if you happen to be a wealthy person and you have the opportunity to give tochacha, you didn't do so. So Akash Baruch Hu says, okay, you obviously right. You had the advantage. People would have listened to you. You didn't give the proper mussar. Okay, so Akash Baruch Hu takes away your wealth. And finally, number four, al shaposkim tzaka b'rabim be'ina nosdim. You pledge. And you pledge in public, and we all understand why people want to pledge in public. Makes them look great. So good. So you pledge in public, and then you don't give. Ve'enu nosnim. Amarav b'shul arba dvarim nechze balabatim yosim letimayon. Again, Rav also has a list. Four things in which the assets and the possessions of balabatim are just going to be diminished. They're going to dwindle away. Al kovshei schar schir. So let's say your worker comes to you because it's time to pay him, and you say, you know what, I'm really sorry. I don't have it right now. Come back next week. Come back a month from now. That is kovesh schar schir. And then there's oshke schar schir. That's number two. And that is you just refuse to pay him. He worked for you. You owe him the money. You refuse to pay him. Right? One is obviously worse than the other, but they're both bad. And the point of the brisa, or the point, that's not a brisa, it's Rav. They're both bad, and if the employer behaves in such a manner. So the assets of the employer, mida keneged mida. This one's pretty obvious. And al shapor ken ol me'al tzavarim enosim al chavarim. Taking the yoke off of your neck, taking responsibility off of you, and putting it on somebody else. Meaning you're really the responsible party, and you decide, you know what? I would like to deputize this responsibility to somebody else. Okay, that's not good. And finally, al gasas haruach. And somebody who's got wealth and is arrogant. And the Gemara says, and you know which one's the worst, right? if you've been around long enough, so you can guess correctly, but you don't have to guess. The Gemara is going to say it. V'gasas ruach keneged kulam. Arrogance is the worst, right? The Rashi writes over here, shemidgaim umishtarin al achem b'shvel oshran. In other words, you loud over other people. You're wealthy, and you feel like, okay, right? I'm in charge. I'm in control, and you really dominate over the people. So that kind of arrogance, that's the worst. Avaba anavim siv, the pasuk by anavim, the navi, or in this case, the ksuvim by anavim, by anavim yeshu aretz, vis angu al rov shalom. Those who are humble. So they're the ones who are going to end up inheriting, and they're going to bring shalom to the world. Hadron al chayashan, that is the end of the second parak of the Masechta. And let's quickly start off the third parak. What I'll do is I'll just run through the Mishnah, but I'll just give a brief introduction. Okay, with the changing of the prakim over here, by going now into the third parak of the Masechta, so we're really going to change topics. As I mentioned, the beginning of the Masechta, there are two mitzvahs of sukkahs. Right, boiled down, it's really that simple. One mitzvah is the mitzvah of sukkah, so already now about half the Masechta dedicated to sukkah. In terms of prakim, two of the five prakim of the Masechta dedicated to the mitzvah of sukkah, and then the other mitzvah of sukkahs is dalabinim. So the Torah tells us that we are to acquire for ourselves four different species, and on sukkahs, take them and shake them. Well, the Torah doesn't mention anything about shaking them, but lekicha. We have to take them on sukkahs, and that's the mitzvah of the dalaminim. The Torah does not give a clear description of what they are. In fact, the Torah doesn't even use the language that was used at the time of the Mishnah, the Gemara, right? In Esrog. How does the Torah describe that? Priates hadar. It's a beautiful fruit. Right, a lulav. There, the Torah gives a somewhat descriptive term of kapos tamarim, and anaf eitz avos, and arvei nachal. And we're gonna describe all of them in great detail. So that's the second mitzvah of sukkahs, and they're two distinct mitzvahs. Okay, as I mentioned already in the beginning of the Masechta, some have the minug of taking the dalminim and shaking them in the sukkah. That's beautiful, but there's no requirement to do so. The halacha views them as two totally separate and distinct mitzvahs. And typically, of course, in terms of the dalaminim, so where do we take them? We bring them to shul, and we shake them in the shul, and we do so in conjunction with challah, which we're going to be discussing later in the Masechta. Okay, good. Okay, right. Why shouldn't you? But you're not required.
No.
Right. Correct. Correct. Agreed. There's no loss in doing so, but there's no requirement to do so. Okay, they're two separate mitzvahs. Good. So that's number one. Number two, just as a general introduction to the dalaminim. So the dalaminim are one mitzvah, right? The Monei HaMitzvah, those who count the mitzvah. So when they speak about the Dalaminim, they count it as one mitzvah. The Rambam counts it as one mitzvah. There are four aspects, there are four components to the one mitzvah, but it's one mitzvah. How do I know that, says the Rambam? How do I know that's one mitzvah? Because they're ma'akiv zeh zeh. The mitzvah does not work unless you have all four. So if you acquire for yourself three of the four minim, and the three out of four is great, right? If after a game in baseball you went 3 for 4, that was an unbelievable day. So as far as the mitzvah of lulav is concerned, it's zero. It counts as nothing. They're ma'akiv zeh zeh. So the Rambam says because they're ma'akiv zeh zeh, so therefore it's one mitzvah with four critical components to it, right? If we can just contrast that, as a simple contrast. Let's talk about your tefillin. So the Shel Yah and Shel Rosh, the Rambam writes, those are two separate mitzvahs. Why are they two separate mitzvahs? Because they're not ma'akiv zeh zeh. For whatever reason, you can't wear the Shel Rosh, you still put on the Shel Yad. Conversely, if you can't put on the Shel Yad, you still put on the Shel Rosh. In other words, they are two totally separate and distinct mitzvahs, and one does not infringe on the other. Now, the difficulty, by the way, with this formula, it's a great formula, but there is a basic difficulty, and that's going to be tchelis and tzitzis. Right, this is just a thinking question. I'm not going to address it right now. But by tchelis and tzitzis, so the Mishnah in Menachos says very clearly that the tchelis and tzitzis are not ma'akiv zeh zeh. In other words, if you have tzitzis but you don't have tchelis, so you still wear the tzitzis, even though you don't have tchelis. Okay, now how's the Rambam count it as one mitzvah or two mitzvahs?
You still have to have two more strings.
I understand. But the point is that the Rambam counts it as one mitzvah, and meanwhile they're not ma'akiv zeh zeh. Okay, so it requires right. Phil, you're definitely touching on one of the approaches that I've heard. But okay, that's a sticking point to this formula. But the formula, for the most part, is a good formula. It's a great way to view it in terms of how to view the Dalaminim. The Dal and Minim are to be viewed as one singular mitzvah. Okay, that's another word of introduction, a third word of introduction. And that's going to be, so when in Sukkot do we have the mitzvah of Dal and Minim? And the answer is day one. Day one. The Pasuk says, L'kachtum lachem bayom harishon. You are to take on the first day. Pri Eitz Hadar, Kapos Tamarim. Anaf Eitz Avos. I'm doing this by heart, by the way, so I apologize if I get the Pasuk wrong. I shouldn't be doing it by heart. Good. So, and then the Pasuk does get a little bit confusing because in the beginning of the Pasuk, it says, mm-hmm. And at the end of the Pasuk, it says, mm-hmm. So how does that work exactly? So later in the Masechta, what we're going to talk about, the idea that outside of the Beis HaMikdash, so it's one day, it's a one day mitzvah. And in the Beis HaMikdash, so there's a mitzvah to do it all 7 days. Okay, good. Well, we'll talk more about that later in the Masechta. But the mitzvah itself is one day. Now, after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made a number of takanos, right? In Rosh Hashanah, in the fourth parak, you're going to see all of them. What is it, 9 in total? I just did it. I shouldn't remember. So it doesn't matter. So the Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made a number of takanos, and one of the takanos that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai did after Churban Beis Sheni is that we are going to take lulav and esrog throughout the duration of Sukkot, as a way to remember the Beis HaMikdash, because unfortunately now in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, we need reminders. So one of the reminders is that from day 2 through day 7, so we're going to be taking Dalaminim Zecher LaMikdash. So the correct way now to view it is that day 1 is that's a mitzvah min Torah to take the Dalaminim, and then days 2 through 7, it's a mitzvah min Rabbanan Zecher LaMikdash, reminding us of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, here in Galus, it does get a little bit confusing, admittedly, because for us, day 2 is Suffolk day 1, meaning we have what's called Sfeika de Yuma, so that means that so day 2 is as a Minag Yisrael that's been around since the time of the Gemara, and now, right, for the last couple thousand years, it's been accepted that we're knowing 2 days of Yontif, so now for our second day of Yontif, so because it's like the first day, So day 2 gets a little bit sticky in terms of, what are we doing on day number 2? Are we doing like the mitzvah d'oraisa? Or is it still acknowledged to be not the first day? It, as you can imagine, it gets confusing. So, right, these are just introductory remarks in terms of the basics regarding the Dalaminim. So again, so the simplest way to look at it is that the mitzvah min haTorah is day one, and then from day two through day seven, we do so nowadays because of a takana that was made by Rav Yochanan Zakkai, a zeichel mikdash. Okay, I think just in terms of introductions, I think we're good. I'll just read through the Mishnah. And then tomorrow, there's much to discuss. Tomorrow happens to be one of the more exciting dapim. It's so much information tomorrow, but okay, that's tomorrow. Right now, let's just go through the Mishnah. Lulav agazav yavish pasul. So if you have either a stolen or a dry lulav, it will be disqualified. And Rashi points out over here in the Mishnah, so the Mishnayos over here are going to treat each one of the dalminim separately. Meaning we're going to do a round of lulav, we're going to do a round of hadassim, we're going to do a round of aravos, and then we're going to do esrog at the end. Although there are common denominators in terms of psulim for all four, but because each one of these minim are a different species, so each one of them are going to have their unique characteristics and their unique disqualifications. Good. So lulav agazav yavish pasul. So if it's stolen or if it is dry, the lulav will be pasul. Shall asher v'shal ir nidachas pasul. If the lulav happens to be coming from an asherah tree, how do I know it's an asherah tree? Stay tuned. Or if the lulav was taken from an ir nidachas, I'll describe that in much greater detail later, not today. So anyway, it's pasul, and the reason why it's pasul, the Gemara is going to discuss, is because they need to be burnt, and a asherah tree needs to be burnt, and the property of an ir nidachas needs to be burnt, and so therefore, what do you have right now? You have something that does not have the requisite shear. The lulav needs to be four tefachim tall, so if it needs to be burnt, you don't have the shear. Nikdam rosho nifritzu alav pasul. If the top of the lulav is cut off, or if the leaves are spread out, but when we say spread out, I'm going to say it like Rashi, meaning that they are more than spread out. They're detached. And I basically tied it back together again against its spine. So disqualified pasul. Nifridu alav kasher. If it's just starting to spread out, that's okay. That's acceptable. Rabbi Yehuda amar yagdenim alamala. Rabbi Yehuda says that you tie it up. Meaning you make sure that it's closed. Even though it's spreading out a little bit, you still have to tie it up. Tzinei harbazuk sheros. If you have a special kind of lulav called tzinei harbazuk, so that's going to be kasher. We'll describe that in much greater detail later on. And lulav sheish bo shosh tefachim kedei lana'aneh bo kasher. And if your lulav is three tefachim tall, and kedei lana'aneh bo, and it is, sorry, just one second. And it's kedei lana'aneh bo. There we go. And it's kedei lana'aneh bo, and it's enough to shake it. So then it would be a kasher lulav. Okay. One last word in terms of the lulav. The lulav is coming from the palm tree, right? The lulav is the frond that comes off the palm tree. It is, in other words, here in Florida, you see palm trees all the time. So for us, it's easy to visualize. So it's before the fronds start opening up, meaning at as they grow from the top of the palm tree, so it's nice and closed. So that's where we're getting the lulav from. Just as an interesting discussion, which palm tree are we describing over here? When they got to Eretz Yisrael, right in the beginning of the 20th century, it was a major debate. In other words, because now they're in Eretz Yisrael with all these. Which palm tree is it? So date palm, right? That's pretty obvious. But they had a lot of other palm trees that weren't producing dates. There was a major discussion, a big machlokas amongst the early poskim of the 20th century in Eretz Yisrael in terms of whether or not canary palms would be acceptable, not acceptable. Anyway, fine, good. But that's basic. Let's quickly recap. Let's review our day today. Number one, we started off with a Mishnah talking about that for Sukkot, for the 7 days of Sukkot. So we have to be in the Sukkah. The yeshiva b'sukkah has to be keva. The Sukkah itself is not keva. But our yeshiva b'sukkah, that needs to be done b'kvias. We have to be in the sukkah, doing everything in the sukkah, eating, drinking, sleeping, being mitayel, relaxing in the sukkah, learning in the sukkah. Okay, the Gemara made a distinction in terms of types of learning, right? The girsah could be done in the sukkah. Okay, for Ian, if you need more headspace, if you need air, so there, if you want, you can leave the sukkah. The Gemara in Chavtes Amad Aleph describes which utensils should be in the sukkah, which utensils should not be in the sukkah. And the basic idea is that the utensils that are you normally expect in the dining room, so that should be in the sukkah. Utensils that are not normally in the dining room, that should not be in the sukkah. Should there be a lantern in the sukkah? If your sukkah is big enough, the answer is yes. Bring the lantern into the sukkah. At what point in time is it considered uncomfortable to be in the sukkah? And the answer is that when it starts dripping so that the food is no longer appetizing. The Gemara tells a story with Abai and Rav Yosef, where Rav Yosef, the moment the drip started coming down, not even a drip, sorry. It was the wind was blowing, and a little bit of the schmutz of the schach came down. Rav Yosef says, I'm tapped out. I am a mitzta'er. And it's at that point in time he left. When do you have to go back to the sukkah after you were excused from the sukkah? So when it comes to eating, you can finish the meal inside. When it comes to sleeping, so you can finish the night inside the house. Even if you wake up early, you don't have to go back to the sukkah. When it gets light, and when you wake up, and when you have both of those present, then and only then do you return to your sukkah. And then for the remainder of the daf, really up until the end of the Mishnah, we talked about Simani Klala. How do we get to that conversation? Well, Reina and Sukkos is a Simon Klala. And so similarly, the other astronomical phenomena also are to be viewed as a Simon Klala. And the Gemara goes through and records all the various Simani Klala. And on top of that, what causes the Simon Klala? So the Gemara goes through that as well. And those are the lists that were given us to the end of the parak. And then, this morning we started the third parak, but really, obviously, tomorrow we're going to do it in much more detail, and we're going to really sit on the Mishnah. But we introduced ourselves to the Dalam Minim, which is the second mitzvah of Sukkos. We gave a brief introduction, and we just simply ran through the Mishnah, giving us the basic requirements regarding a sukkah, what qualifies and what disqualifies, and specifically the lulav. Adkan.